Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, hi, or in order of where most of our listeners come from on kernels, guten tag, bonjour, ciao, hola, selamat pagi, assalamu alaikum. Wherever you're from, I hope you're doing good. I hope you're having a nice day, feeling well. This is episode 9 of Kernels, I believe. I'm Christopher Hooton, as always, for better or worse. And this week I caught up with Mark Marin, who, if you're a not even a podcast aficionado, if you've ever listened to a podcast in your life, you're probably aware of the man, because he's kind of like the founding father of podcasts, really. He's done well over 100, maybe he's even into the thousands by this point. One of the most listened to in the world. Has spoke to pretty much everyone in the entertainment industry you can think of. Even spoke to Obama in 2015, I think it was. And he's definitely an influence to this podcast in how he's been very informal in his approach to interviewing and has kind of been more interested in the human being that he's talking to and their life and how they're feeling, as opposed to, you know, talking just about their career and their professional life. I'm just kind of set the scene for the interview. He's been over in London. He was in town doing kind of junket interviews for this new TV show he's acting in called Glow, which is Genji Kohan's new show for Netflix. So she did, you probably know from Orange is the New Black, that was all her. And then Weeds before that, which is a really nice little show. Not as well known as Orange is the New Black, but I think maybe better. Glow is her new series. It's about women's wrestling in the 80s. And Mark, who does do a little bit of acting outside of his podcast, plays kind of the guy who gets this quite shabby wrestling league together and casts all the wrestlers out of struggling actors. So yeah, we caught up after he'd finished a lot of 5-minute interviews back to back, which is something we talk a little bit about, because obviously he's mostly deals in 2-hour-long interviews. We were talking in this fancy hotel suite, which is always weird and kind of a strange elephant in the room when you're talking to someone who's quite humble like Mark is. And yeah, about his acting career. I mean, he wouldn't call himself an actor, but he's actually had quite a few roles lately. He used to have his own show on IFC, Marin, you may have seen, and he's done bits and pieces here and there. He was in Girls for a while on HBO. He was in this show called Easy on Netflix that I really like. It didn't get a huge amount of hype, but yeah, I was a fan. But he does a good job. He just goes for it with no kind of, you know, huge background. He was a stand-up comic originally, but does these dramatic roles and does them well. So we talked a little bit about his kind of this arc he's moving into acting, a little bit about podcasting, and just kind of about life in general. He's a lover, not a fighter, and a sensitive soul like myself. And we ended up just two guys talking about feelings, you know. So yeah, I hope you enjoy, and I'll speak to you in a couple of weeks' time.
How's it going, man?
Okay, man. You?
Yeah, good to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Thank you. Okay. Yeah. What do you think? Yeah, do I look good for radio?
Yes, you do.
Okay.
It's fancy here, huh?
It is fancy.
I saw the doorman had like these epaulettes on and like some kind of origami.
I know. I don't know. You know, I know that they have an important job, and I feel like I should, like, I carry my own bag in. Like, I like to carry my own duffel bag usually.
Yeah.
And then when you come to a fancy place, you feel like you're letting them down, where actually you're just saving a little money. But that's not the reason I do it, because then I think that, like, they think I'm cheap, and I'm like, no, it's just like, it's not that big a deal.
It's like you don't want to let them down because it's their job, but then also I feel weird handing over my bags to someone like I'm being a jerk. So it's kind of always a difficult dilemma for me.
Well, I think it's sort of a class thing in some weird way, because like I think some people like to be treated that way, and I guess it's part of the experience to be treated like that, but I don't particularly like it.
Yeah.
I'd rather carry my own bag up to my room.
How have you been spending your non-promotion time over in London? Are you over here for a few days or?
No, I got in last night. I was very tired. I ordered food and they have, it's exciting. They have a regular menu, then they have an Asian menu, and then they have an Arabic menu. So you can sort of like travel. So I got a fattoush salad and lentil soup. That was my big night last night. And this morning I woke up very early because I'm all fucked up. And I walked from here to the Tate Modern to see that Tillman show.
Oh, nice.
And I saw the, what's that? Why am I forgetting his name? The other show. Giacometti.
Okay.
Giacometti and Tillman's. I had not seen that many Giacomettis. You know, you think you've seen one Giacometti and you've seen them all, but he definitely made some shift. And to see him in person was pretty more exciting than I anticipated.
Yeah. You guys see the Hockney one still over there?
Maybe? I don't think the Hockney's still there. Is it still there?
I think maybe just finished or something. You might have missed it.
Like the photos or paintings?
All of it. It's like huge. They got like the ones from LA, the ones he did over in New Yorkshire, the photos. It's pretty big. Huh.
Yeah, I didn't see that. The last time I was here, they had the Rothko room set up.
Love
with
that.
Those Four Seasons paintings, those the dark ones, they had them lit in that dark. That was great. That was. I was hoping that was a regular exhibition, but I don't think it was there.
It's very emotional, isn't it? You're just hit by all this color, and it's like, fuck.
Well, that set of paintings are very dark, and they were done towards the end of his career, I think, for it was a contract for the Four Seasons Hotel in New York, and I think he painted them to be horrendously kind of almost... like they definitely were not, I couldn't see eating around them, and they were very dark and kind of purpley, and they were lit in a very specific way in that room, and I'd never seen them all at once. I'd only read about them, so they were not the whole experience was kind of mind-blowing.
Is it weird for you doing kind of junkets, because you're used to doing, you know, long form conversations, and suddenly you've got people coming in 5 minutes at a time?
Well, it's only weird in that eventually you figure out what to say in those 5 minutes. You know, if it's specific, like for this show, they ask questions, the same ones over and over again, and occasionally you surprise yourself. Sometimes you just take the easier path. And I think that this show is primarily about the women, so there's not a lot on me, you know, in the sense that if I'm sitting there with Allison or Betty or whoever I'm doing it with, I would rather they talk, which is a sign of growth for me. So I just let them talk, and then I'll step up a little bit.
Yeah, you don't want to be the guy who makes a big deal in the middle of a show.
The one guy in a show that has 14 women on it that can't shut up. It's not going to be good for anybody.
I've always admired on WWF how you tread the line when it comes to people promoting things, but you still get some time in for shooting the shit, so I like
that. The promotion thing is really just a window of opportunity, you know. Sometimes you can't get people unless they're out promoting something, and they know the deal with WTF in that it's not fundamentally a promotional show, but usually it gets in there, and sometimes it's good if what they're promoting is something I like or I've seen. But usually it's not the focus of any of the interviews. It's just what's given me the opportunity to talk to certain people. Because certain people don't go out unless they're pitching.
Yeah. I discovered your podcast. I'm sure you've heard a lot of stories like this by now, but when I had a really rough breakup.
Oh, yeah?
And it was terrible. I needed to move out of my house, and I was so debilitated that I couldn't. Oh. My parents had to come and put my shit in boxes, and I was back at my parents' house, aged 25 or something.
The worst.
And I was like, I need to distract my mind for some reason, and I ended up listening to it. And
oh, good.
It was not like it changed my life, but it's just something distracting, cathartic about, I don't know.
Yeah.
I was thinking it's weird, because when I try and read a book or read some text on a screen, or even sometimes watching things, I get distracted for it very easily, but listening to audio for some reason, I just kind of go into the zone and can stay there for
hours.
It's
a different thing. Like, you know, it occupies the part of your brain that you actually use when you get distracted from other things. Like, if you're reading, there's an inner monologue that distracts you, or your own thoughts. Or if you're watching TV, you know, something else is going on in your head, or you go do something else. But when it's just audio, it's actually that part that's active. So you can do other things, but still be totally engaged. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it makes sense.
I just thought of it now. I'm glad it makes sense.
And how did you end up doing Glow? Was it something you pursued, or did someone be like, oh, this is so Marc Maron, this part, let's like get him on the phone? Or?
Well, I tried to figure out, trying to get to the bottom of that. Like, what happened really was that I had finished my show, and I wasn't planning on doing anything. I was going to take some time off from both stand-up and, you know, TV. Well, I didn't think I would be really going out for... I didn't, you know, I did 4 seasons of Maron, and I thought that'd be it for TV for me, and I was fine with that. But then, like, a month or so, it feels like, very shortly after I finished my show, my management sent a script over for Glow, or maybe even just the sides. I don't even remember if I read the whole script, but I read the guy, and I'm like, I could be this guy. This just seems good. Like, I connected with it, you know. And I read that it was set in the 80s, and so I went down to the place in my neighborhood that sells glasses. I know the women who own it, and I got some aviator frames that I thought would look 80s, and I put on a Lacoste shirt. And I had the woman who is my personal trainer occasionally, who's also an actress, of course. I asked her if she would read with me, so she did Allison's part. And then I had this guy that works for me sometimes shoot me on the iPhone. And I did like 3 of those, and I sent them off. Because I was told they weren't reading people in L.A., and they didn't want me to come in or anything. So I was just really kind of like, okay, I'll just do it. I didn't have anything invested in it other than I thought I could do it. And we sent them off, and they cast me on that recording from my iPhone. But I think that when I asked Genji about it, and I asked Liz and Carly about it, it was just one of those things where they didn't know what they were looking for, but when they saw me, they saw the guy. So that's how that.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Nice, that's nice to hear. It's funny you mentioned the shirt, actually. I spent most of the pilot coveting the shirt you wear, I think, in the first one. Kind of got like a little Sopranos-y vibe. I really have a soft spot for that look where it's like a dad's kind of gone to a resort somewhere on holiday.
Well, there's a lot of those shirts. I know that shirt, I didn't wear the one that I wore in the audition, but that shirt with the big stripes.
You had like some kind of diamond kind of
that
shirt
one.
Or anything. I like that.
Yeah, there was some those like it was sort of a hybrid. This guy, I wore the same pair of pants for the entire season. There were these bell bottoms. I think they were actually from the 70s, the late 70s, and then the black cowboy boots on every show, same boots. But the shirts kept changing, and they were specifically mid 80s style shirts. You don't see them around. No one's really bringing those back.
Yeah, they're hard to find these days. It sucks. It looked like, I mean, I've only seen the pilot, but it looked like a fun role because your character is kind of a piece of shit, really, especially to begin with.
Yeah, he is a piece of shit in a lot of ways, but I think that over the arc of the show, you start to see his, you know, vulnerabilities. You know, he's kind of got a high opinion of himself and what he wants to achieve and what he's already achieved, but the success of any of those things don't really match up with his high opinion of himself, except for some, you know, a little bit of success over, you know, from a, you know, what was the movie I called Disco, is horror movies. I direct sort of B horror movies. but he is sort of a piece of shit, but not, I don't think he's evil. I think he's flawed, and he's not, he's a bit of a bully, but he's not an evil guy. You know, he's sort of a kind of a, you know, his own worst enemy in some ways.
Yeah.
I definitely related to that, you know, because he does seem to be sort of, he's a little hard on Ruth, on Allison's character, right away, which can only mean that they love each other. So that was the way it always felt to me, that, you know, as hard as I was on her, that it was just to protect myself from, you know, whatever feelings that were really there. And I think that's the way he deals with life. He's always kind of protecting himself from having feelings other than, you know, kind of frustration or anger or you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Did you watch wrestling as a kid?
Not really, no. I remember seeing it occasionally, local wrestling.
I always think there's, like, nothing more pure than that moment, like, in a kid's life where they think the wrestling is real. Like, amazing to think that all of that soap opera shit's happening is actually happening.
Well, I think the more I talk to people, like, it never locked in with me as a thing that I liked as a kid, because I was an odd kid. But I remember seeing it, you know, they had all the, you know, mid-sized cities always had a wrestling scene, and they used to have a local wrestling show on Sundays. And I would watch it. And it was, at that time, it was like the 70s. So it was just dudes in, like, unitards with weird big hair, you know. And they had wrestling magazines. There were always those dudes in unitards just covered in blood. But I never connected with it. But I think whether it's real or it's fake, it does provide an outlet for something, you know, in kids and in adults. I mean, kids who grew up with wrestling, they still like wrestling. And whether it's real or not, it's not the issue. It's the excitement of it, the entertainment of it, and the story of it.
There's that line in the pilot where someone's like, is this real? And they're like, who cares? Like, it's just entertaining. It's just quite good summed up, really.
If it was real, it'd be a sport, you know, and it's not really a sport. Because if you look at wrestling at the Olympics, they're not, you know, don't have big hair and characters. Yeah, that's what wrestling looks like.
Yeah, they're not playing Poison, is they?
Yeah, right, exactly. So, you know, it's definitely an amazing sort of entertainment that requires a tremendous amount of skill and choreography and physical risk-taking. But yeah, I don't want to break anyone's heart, but yeah, it's scripted.
Yeah. In terms of we're talking a bit about Marc Maron, the actor, as the in the phase you're in at the moment. Like, I saw bits and pieces of Maron, but it was actually when I was watching that Joe Swanberg show, Easy,
yeah.
That I really liked your performance in that. I was like, I felt proud of you. I was like, it was my favorite episode.
And thanks.
You enjoyed doing it.
I did like that. You know what? Well, I'm good if it's close to me. You know, I don't know that I'd be good at, like, you know, learning Russian. Or, you know, having to do Shakespeare.
Yeah.
But if it's within my emotional range, I can do it. I think I got, over the four seasons of Maron, I got comfortable on camera, which took a few seasons, but I knew it would. But I'm pretty good at being present. And the thing with Swanberg's show, Easy, I just shot another one as that guy year later, was that it was all improvised, and it was that guy's not that far from me. He's like me a decade ago. He's kind of a real dick in a way.
Yeah,
but kind of shameless. Same with this guy on Glow. Though the guy on Glow is not fundamentally neurotic, so that was really just an exercise of turning that off, that self consciousness. Whereas I think it's same a little bit with the guy on Easy too. Neither one of those characters are as self-aware or as self-conscious as I am.
Yeah, it's kind of an overlooked show a little bit, I think, but I liked it. I liked
Easy.
I liked how in the episode it brought it full circle as well. I think a lot of people would have left it after he has that ignominious bit where he's outed at the show, but like the fact that then they came together and were like, "Oh, we shared a drink. We kind of both learned something from that." It was a nice.
That was good. Yeah, the thing about working with Swanberg is you don't know what's going to happen in those scenes, because he really, he gives you very little. It's barely an outline.
Yeah.
in terms of what's going to happen in a scene. So the emotions that happen, you know, on any of the takes, which you don't do many of, are fairly genuine if you're in it, you know, if you're present in the improv. So like what turned out in that scene was sort of sweet. It was sort of, it was a pretty good moment.
I suppose it must be terrifying as an actor, though, I think, turning up and being like, right, I've got to make this good. All these people are here to shoot this, and I've got to fucking like make the scene.
I don't know. I don't think about. I don't. I guess the benefit of doing my show and having a certain amount of control as my entry into acting was sort of nice, because like I was working at all levels as a producer, an actor, sometimes a director and a writer, and you're still working with all those people even more than a small shoot like Joe's. But I think that it's just a matter of, you know, after a certain point in your life, after you've been doing something long enough, you know, you show up and you're ready to work. You know, there's not a lot of, even with Glow, which was a little daunting because I wasn't playing myself, you know, I wasn't, you know, the star of the show. And it was definitely a set piece. I was a little nervous about that. Mm. You know, because that was on a production level, that was really the highest level of production I've worked at. With Joe, with Swanberg, you're kind of like, it's a groupthink thing, and it's very organic.
Yeah.
And Marin, though scripted and big, you know, it was operating at a budget that was definitely smaller than Glow, and there was less people than Glow. But to sort of step into the role of being the guy that's got to put together, you know, 14 women in a show, the show within a show, and hold that, I was nervous about it, but I wasn't really scared. You know, I was just like, well, the scripts are the scripts, and you know, I'm here to do this. You know, I'm not here to write, I'm not here to produce, I'm here to be this guy. I was a little nervous about that, standing in front of all the women when I have to do the like the audition monologue. You know, it was like there was that wavering of like, you know, what, you know, Mark, between Mark and the guy, you know what I mean? But yeah, the improving thing, I went back and did another one, and I wasn't that nervous. It's kind of fun. It's very engaging.
Yeah.
It's much more engaging than scripted.
We're always really intrigued by, like, actors that don't necessarily have a background in acting. Like, I made a film recently myself, just a small one, and had this character that was kind of a sad part, and I didn't want to make it seem too dark, so I just got, like, a stand-up comedian who had zero training, and it did such a good job. You just brought something different to it, and I don't know, I don't want to obviously put down training because it's great, but there is something almost like innate, isn't there, about acting that you can, if you're a creative
that.
Person, you can like turn on in a way.
I believe that's true, and I've talked to a lot of actors, though I'm wary to call myself an actor. I think I can do it, and I think that if I'm cast correctly, I can do it. But I do envy and do respect trained actors in a way that, you know, like there's certain things where, you know, training and experience and really having control over your mind and body to really depart from who you are to be in a role is interesting. Like there are certain actors that are always a little bit of themselves, you know, that are, you know, movie stars generally are paid to be some version of themselves because people want that. But yeah, you know, then there are these people that can really even someone like De Niro, who you think is just, you know, himself, is very refined in terms of, you know, creating character, even though you can see him in there. But for me, like, I felt that if I can show up and I can listen, you know, that I think you're right that there is an intuition to it, and if you have the natural talent for it, but it's not really about whether or not you can say or do the lines. Some people just can't do it. I don't know what that is. Like, you know, there are just some people that, you know, if you see shitty movies or you see porn from the 80s, 70s, you know, that they're just people that can't be on camera, that they don't know, and it's nothing you can really learn, I don't think. Like, the natural talent for it is not about doing the lines or whatever. It's being able to not, you know, to be on camera or to be on stage and not be self-conscious or appear self-conscious. Because, you know what I mean? I don't know what it is, but it is something that I think is,
fundamentally a natural talent. And if you don't have that, it's going to be difficult for you.
Yeah. When I did a little bit of acting, the thing I found so liberating that someone said to me is, like, it's okay that you're a bit yourself. That's why you've been cast at the end of
That's
the day.
Right.
Because, you know, it's always you inside
right.
that character. So you don't have to worry about fighting that. You kind of just
right.
be the character through yourself kind of thing.
Right, but it's like the degree of transformation
yeah.
is really the difference between, you know, someone who's just sort of a natural talent and somebody who's a trained actor, I think.
Mm. And I'm bringing it around the thing I always like to ask podcast guests is, how are you doing?
I'm okay. I'm a little tired. I'm a little, like, jet laggy. But in general, I'm okay. You know, my life is okay. It's pretty good.
So a lady, aren't you? It's all...
Yeah. A woman?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a girlfriend who's a painter. And we're doing pretty good. My country is not great.
No.
And that sort of hangs over all of us, you know, in a very sort of existentially terrifying way. And managing that, you know, I guess some people check out, but if you're checked in, there's no shortage of anxiety.
Yeah.
And pure terror, really.
Yeah. And I'm doing all the, you know, the different creative things that you do. Do they bring you, like, joy? Do you feel, like, satisfied when you've done them? Or how is that
sometimes
relationship?
Sometimes I don't notice enough. Sometimes I'm just keep moving and I don't, you know, really engage the joy thing. You know, I'm not good at, you know, letting that happen or framing my accomplishments in the joy column.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just got done with a tour, stand-up tour, and I shot a special, you know, and over the 20 or 25 dates I did moving up to this special, you know, it came together pretty nicely, and I felt pretty good about the special. But then I did two dates to finish out the tour, one in Philadelphia and one in D.C., Washington, D.C. And that final night of the tour was really pretty joyful and pretty a good show, and, you know, like, I felt that I achieved something. So I found some joy in that. I tend to find, where do I find the joy? I don't know, it's fleeting, but it happens.
Yeah. For me, it's more like in the moment, and then... I don't know, once it's over, then that's when you can hit it down a bit more, when you're actually doing it. And...
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, the tour was good for that. Doing the stand-up was good for that. And, yeah, some of the podcasts I do, I feel that if the conversation is good, like, I leave kind of elevated, you know, or I feel like it was a real connected thing, and I have a good time with that. Yeah. I like playing guitar, too. That makes me feel good.
I can tell your outros are on guitar at every possible opportunity.
I tried to put them in there. I don't know why or when I started doing that, but I figured, fuck it. I play. It's not that bad.
Yeah.
I'm pretty good. Why not just end it? Like, I figure at that point, it's like, if people don't want to listen to it, I'm not pressuring them. It's just there.
Yeah.
They want to write it out.
Are you a famous person now?
Am I?
Yeah.
I have a fame, you know, really limited to people that appreciate me. Like, I don't have fame that... I'm not one of those people that everybody knows whether they like me or not. So that gives me a little freedom.
Yeah.
In the sense of being able to have a life and being able to, you know, kind of not get a big head about it. I find that the people that know me and like what I do are all pretty good people. They're pretty respectful, sort of sensitive, thoughtful people, you know, almost 100%. So when somebody goes Marc Maron or they come up to me and they talk to me, you know, I feel very connected to them. I'm not a freak that just exists in some celebrity sphere where, you know, you walk down the street and people point at you, whether
yeah.
they know you or not.
And you're, like, covering your face.
Well, I just don't, like, I know people that are at that level, and it's very hard life to, it's hard to have a life, you know. But so my fame is very dealable for me. And I appreciate the people that, you know, appreciate what I do.
My test is always this. If you're, like, in a fancy bathroom in a restaurant or in a hotel or like this something, and they have the hand lotion alongside the soap, do you still get excited and use it?
I never use hand lotion in there. I don't use hand lotion hardly at all. I do use lotion on my face.
But, it, like, it's there.
Yeah.
Like, it smells great, no?
Yeah, no. Like lotion, I'm very specific about it because some lotion's on your hands and it's like never, it's on there for too long.
That's shocking. You've lost complete touch with reality.
Really?
No, it's fine.
It's just too oily. You just don't know with skin products, you know? I'm very specific about certain things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I use one on my face, and I use patchouli that I've used for decades. But that's like, and I don't fuck with it. I'll mix it up. I'll use hotel shampoos. I'm not too crazy with shampoos anymore.
That's good. It's a good way to be.
But in terms of, you know, bathrooms, like I used to be very excited about Dyson hand dryers.
Oh, yeah.
Those are always exciting.
Have you ever done, sometimes if there's two next to each other and there's no other people queuing, I do one hand in each. Go,
which is no.
Very, feels very, very
really?
Nice. Yeah.
Oh,
I recommend trying that next time you...
Well, I'll look out for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like, I was here in London, and I took that walk today, and a couple people recognized me. And, you know, it's very funny because there's a similarity to a lot of the people that that know my shit, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. All right, well, thanks, Mark. It was really good to talk to you.
Is that all right?
Yeah, it was great, thanks.
Thank you.
It's good to meet the godfather of podcasting.
Oh, I'm happy to have been able to do it. Thanks, nice talking to you.
So that was Mark. I hope you enjoyed our chat. It was a very free-flowing one. It was one of the nicest ones I think I've done. I enjoyed doing it, and it was very easy. A very easy man to talk to. So yeah, I'll see you in a couple of weeks' time. And as always, hit us up on Twitter with any thoughts or questions, people you'd like to see on the podcast. And if you do get time, to hit up iTunes or the podcast app and give us a little review and a rating on there. That does help us out hugely. Surprisingly so. It seems like that stuff is pointless, but it's actually not. So that would be great. And yeah, catch you soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.